and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Let's start with news that the Dewan Rakyat session for today was cut short from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. after several parliamentary officers tested positive for COVID-19. Now, we don't yet know if these half-day sittings will continue in the coming days, but it's already raised some concern. PKR Batu MP Prabhakaran has questioned the motive behind the decision, saying that he hopes that this is not a political strategy to bury some of the motions brought by the opposition. It's really raised a couple of questions, but the reasoning given is to limit exposure of sitting MPs to COVID-19, to limit the time that they're in the hall.
Right, Melissa, this returns us to the question of the virtual parliament idea, something that's been practiced around the globe, not in all countries. And I think at this point in time, there's a lot of cherry picking. I can cherry pick as good as the next guy in terms of, you know, countries I would like to cite as exemplars of moving ahead with
which
technology.
Which cherries would you pick, Sharad?
Well, Melissa, let's start with the letter, the alphabet A.
Okay.
Well, you know, so there's Albania and Angola, both which allow for virtual sitting and all sittings and also electronic voting. And you can go all the way up to Ukraine and Venezuela that also allow some sort of hybrid forms of virtual sittings as well as face-to-face sittings with the appropriate SOPs. Mm. All this coming from an interparliamentary union paper. It's a survey, really, of what's happening around the world. Because there are many countries where, you know, those in power have taken the opportunity to halt parliament, essentially, and not provide an avenue for a robust discussion. Others that had not quite responded to the COVID situation,
right,
basically conducting parliament as always.
Yeah, I mean, to be completely honest with you, I think what we're hoping to see is, steps or early steps, you know, there's absolutely been no preparation. I think we keep hearing this from today. The latest was from Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri Yaakob saying that virtual parliament is not a possibility, you know, and I think for every reason that's been given, there's always a justification, but there's also a rebuttal. There's always been, you know, some way to debunk it. So I think what we're hoping is, you know, really coming up from the Speaker, really coming up from Parliament as to the reasons why there have been no preparations for holding virtual Parliament. Is there just a lack of political will to do this?
Yeah, a lack of political will, a lack of imagination. You know, in this case, we see...
It can't be a lack of suggestion, though. There's been suggestions coming from many quarters. Undi 18, Parliament Digital, one of them.
Yeah, suggestions galore. And, of course, you only have to read around to figure out that, you know, there are options. All kinds of platforms, secure platforms can be provided. And there are ways of confirming that a vote was taken, or, you know, somebody voted in a particular way. And so, again, you know, I think it's a lack of imagination. I mean, it's maybe a kind of complacency. Who would have thought that, you know, we would open Parliament? This one of the few, full parliamentary sittings are expected this year, only to have it curtailed on day one. And
yeah.
So, you know, I think a real disappointment when you consider how important Parliament is to move the country forward.
Definitely. We're going to be getting the thoughts of an MP after this about this specific issue. But let's take a quick look at other news. We have Datuk Seri Najib Razak, who has reportedly been appointed as Barisan Nasional Backbenchers Chairman. Now, as Backbenchers Chairman, Najib will be in a position to decide the order of the debaters from the Barisan National ranks and look to relay instructions to Barisan backbenchers on what they should and can speak about during debates. And I think, if I'm not mistaken here, Barisan National has about 43 MPs, 20 in government, so the majority, 23 backbenchers, of which Najib will have a say. If this story is in fact true, this story is coming from the Malaysian Insight, who are quoting BN sources.
Well, this story has been, of course, commented on by a whole range of people. And the question, of course, is the optics of Barisan National choosing somebody who's a convicted felon, and no doubt a former prime minister, and beloved by a good segment of the country, I believe. You know, there's there's, I think, something to be said about his enduring attraction to a huge range of people who believe that one MDB is either a hoax, or they, even when you know, other cases come up, they say, you know, the money that was misspent allegedly was really done for out of concern for widows and orphans. So there's a whole range of emotional responses to this man that maybe would intrigue people from other countries. Indeed, for people from other planets.
Right. Well, if I may quote that Malaysian Insight story, apparently Najib's appointment as the backbenchers chairman comes again amid tensions between UMNO and Bersatu, as we know. But it seems that Najib might be playing a bigger role to resolve the dispute. And I'm really quite curious as to how this might pan out. We're going to keep a very close eye on how this actually develops. But Najib is expected by many commentators and pundits to play an active role, particularly because his court cases, his appeal has now been suspended because court has been suspended because of the CMCL.
Well, you know, Melissa, there's, you know, something to be said for his control of the party. UMNO, you know, he is said to be very popular among division leaders. The source of that continued popularity is much debated. But to the extent that he continues to lead a faction in this very important, powerful party at this point in our a political trajectory, I mean, is it, we are at a juncture, as it were, between, you know, what was it that we wanted to leave behind and the future. And so he remains an important voice. And of course, he's also been able to rehabilitate himself through a very savvy campaign. No doubt he's
invested. The Bosco campaign?
Yes, I mean, and you know, the investment in that campaign, not just in terms of money, I would have no idea what kinds of monies were spent on this campaign, this ongoing campaign. But I think the thought, I mean, really targeted towards changing the register of in terms of his appeal, remember, going on a motorcycle and, you know, becoming the man of the people. Something that perhaps we would not associate, or some of our cities in some parts of the country would not associate with the man necessarily, right? And so there is this really interesting play of meanings around the man that continue to, I think, either intrigue or shock or bewilder. Or appeal to
people. Well,
we've
seen public sentiment about him as reflected in a recent Merdeka Center survey about his reputation. All right, we're going to take a quick break on the show, but after this, we will come back and talk to an MP about what she plans to champion in this parliamentary sitting. That's all coming up in just a few minutes. Stay tuned to Consider This.